Welcome to On Air, a podcast discussion at the intersection of artificial intelligence and international relations.
Welcome to On Air. I'm your host, Midlir Mema. Have you noticed that personal smartphone assistants like Siri, Alexa, Cortana, and Google Assistant have traditionally featured female-sounding voices? Why is that? And furthermore, what do these intentional choices say about what consumers prefer and why? Now, these questions become even more important in light of the 2019 UNESCO report, which concludes that the prominence of female-sounding voice assistants encourages stereotypes of women as submissive and compliant. Now, to talk more about this report and also a very interesting study of which she's the author of and came out last year in 2022, and to address these questions and more, I'm joined today by Dr. Sylvie Boho. Dr. Boho is an assistant professor at TBS Education Toulouse, France, where Sylvie teaches ethical marketing and consumer behavior. She's also an affiliate researcher at the Institute for Advanced Study in Toulouse. Dr. Boho, bienvenue dans notre programme. C'est un plaisir de nous avoir avec nous. Welcome to our program.
Merci. Very good French.
Well, yeah, that's the best I can master. Please don't ask me to do more than that.
I won't.
Well, Sylvie, again, thank you for being with us today. I want to start with you telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, because you have a fascinating background, right? So you make this transition from consumer psychology to AI and emerging tech. How do you manage that? And what is it that you're trying to do? What are you trying to achieve with that transition?
Well, first, thank you for inviting me. And I worked for 8 years in the industry as a research director, market research director, before moving into academia and doing a PhD and started working as a professor and conducting research. And when I was working in the industry, I was conducting research, but I couldn't choose my topics of research. And I had to deal with clients. So I made the choice to move to academia in order to really dig into consumer behavior and really understand the underlying psychological mechanisms of our consumption choices. That's what really what I'm interested in.
And then the transition to AI, emerging tech, is like a natural progression in a way, because it's so ubiquitous, and so we have to deal with that. We can't avoid it.
Yeah, well, I started working, my first topic of research was gender in advertising and in marketing. So I started working on how women were represented in advertising because one of my clients in the industry was, when I was working in marketing research, was L'Oreal. My neighbor in Toronto was Tim Piper, who worked at that time in Ogilvy, and he launched the first viral ad for Dove, so representing women with different body types. And I was really interested in knowing and trying to find out the impact of being exposed to an ideal model or a normal model on both marketing efficacy and consumer well-being. And so that's why I decided to do my PhD on women's representation in advertising, how they are sexually represented and the impact on consumer well-being. And then I moved into AI because here the same issue is how women are represented in these virtual worlds, how differently they are represented depending on the type of AI and the impact, the possible negative impact on women.
Well, thank you for that. And of course, I'm looking at our own perspective as international relations specialists, I guess, traditional IR, international law perspective. But then you look at how AI, as you point out, and really this digital kind of reality is also impacting our everyday choices. There has been a lot of discussion recently on the question of sentience and consciousness with regards to ChatGPT or even Google's Llama before that last year. Now, one of the things that I've noticed was that the predominant pronoun used for Llama, for example, was she or her, even though we're told actually by those who worked with Llama that the AI itself prefers it rather than any kind of gendered pronoun. So first of all, where do you fall on the Lambda or ChatGPT debate on the issue of sentience and consciousness? And then second, to the heart of the matter, really the most important part, why do we keep insisting on labeling AI with these gendered pronouns?
Well, this is like very, very interesting topic. And I'm actually starting to work on this specific topic of how and why we perceive non-sentient entities as sentient. And we are hardwired, actually, to perceive these non-sentient beings as sentient. We have a human capacity to see humanness in non-human objects and to empathize with non-human entities. Why? Just because they have these human attributes. Just seeing a Roomba moving, people will start interacting with it as if it was a living entity, and attributing a gender or a voice to a robot will make it more human. So that's the first thing. We are hardwired to bond with machines, and that's, we do that instinctively, intuitively, and most importantly, subconsciously. And so humans indulge so completely in this instinct that it may be then difficult for us to distinguish between a real and artificial human. So that's the first thing. So do we think that these robots are human? Yes, we do. Are they human? They are not. And are they sentient? From my understanding, they are not yet, and they won't be until a very long time. So right now, I don't believe that this conversational bot, this AI, are sentient. Then the second question is, why do we attribute a female gender to these bots? Well, with my colleagues, we published a research last year about this specific topic. And what we found is that we try to really better understand why AI is usually female. And women, what we found is that women are actually used in AI objects to humanize these objects. So femininity is actually used to humanize non-human entities. So what we found is that female robots are not only endowed with more positive human qualities than male robots, so we tend to perceive them as more trustworthy, more moral, nicer, warmer, they are also perceived as more human in general on many different scales, and they're expected to be more prone to consider our unique needs. So these findings may point to a new possible explanation of why female bots are favored over their male counterparts when designing AI. Just people prefer female intelligent machines because such machines are more strongly associated with humanness. And not just because people see women as servants or simple tools. This is true. It's one of the reasons. Because traditionally, women tend to be more assistant. They tend to have more assistant roles during their career. So that's one reason. But it's also because injecting femininity is a way to increase the humanness of this AI. Just assigning a gender is enough to make a non-living entity more human, appearing more human. But female gendering is even stronger. The role of female gendering is even stronger than male gendering in injecting humanness in this robot.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into this. Now, the study you're referring to is one that you published last year in Psychology and Marketing. It's the one that got my attention. I read it and really, really enjoyed it. And I thought it was also really breathtaking in terms of the scope of it, right? I'd like you to actually talk about this because these are five studies that are actually included in this one study of yours. I think there's a total sample of about 3,000 participants. this is not a small N study, right? This is quite a comprehensive survey. And we'll put a link to this, and you have also helpfully made the article available, I think, on your personal website as well. So we'll put a link to that material and people can read it and hopefully react to it. But one of the things that you are talking about is humanist, quote unquote humanist, H-U-M-A-N-N-E-S-S. And you also discuss how you measure this perceived humanist, right? You have specific measures. That's what you call, I think, the march of progress. Can you talk a little bit about this? And a related question, why is it that females are perceived, at least in your study, as more human than males? Where does this march of progress illustration, in a way, fall in this discussion?
Yes. Okay. So in this research, so we used different measures of perceived humanness compared to both animals and machines. And so we measured both blatant humanness and more explicit and implicit humanness. So to measure blatant humanness of female and male bots compared to animals, we used, as you mentioned, the Ascent Humanization Scale based on the classic March of Progress illustration. So from ape to human.
Okay, so one is like the evolutionary scale, right? So you start kind of crawling and then you're standing upright.
Exactly. We have five different drawings from ape to human. And we, of course, we created a female version and a male version for our study. And we randomized the exposure to either the female or the male version, not to avoid this gender bias of the scale, right? And so that was to compare female and male bots to animals. So we used this scale, and we explicitly asked online respondents to indicate how evolved they perceived female or male bots to be using this this Peres scale from ancient apes to modern humans. Okay. But then to measure the blatant perceived humanness of female and male bots compared to machines, here we created a scale that measures blatant mechanistic dehumanization and not animalistic, because it was the animal, the progress. So here was mechanistic humanization by picturing man's evolution and women's evolution from robot to human instead of ape to human. So we created a scale. We here, again, we have five drawings from a very simple computer to different types of robots until humanoid robots until human. So that was the really blatant humanness. And then we had other measures capturing more subtle, so across different studies, measuring more subtle and implicit perceptions of humanness by just asking respondents the level of emotions they attribute to male and female bots, for example. So some emotions are said to distinguish humans from machines, for example, friendly, fun-loving. People tend to believe that humans are more likely to experience these emotions than machines. And other emotions to distinguish humans from animals, such as organized and polite. So people tend to think that humans are more likely to experience these emotions than animals. And finally, we also used an implicit association test in another study to investigate whether female bots are more likely than male bots to be associated with the concept of a human rather than machine. So implicit association test is when you, what we measure is actually the time of response, the time respondents take to associate one concept to another concept. And the longer respondents take to associate this concept, meaning that they are less correlated, that we associate, for example, female robots more because we're going to be quicker to answer to say that female robots are warm, for example. They are associated more with warm. So what we found is that women, because we also asked in the very first study men and women just to check whether we had the same stereotypes for men and women and for female and male robots. And so what we found that women and female robots are perceived as more human on most of the subtle and all the blatant and implicit measures of humanness. And we found that men and male robots are perceived as more human on the negative dimensions of the subtle measures of humanness. But overall, for example, the robot to human and ape to human scale, the ones I mentioned, female robots are perceived as more human. So as I said, these findings really point to this explanation of why female robots are favored over male robots, that they are just perceived as more human.
One of your conclusions is that what our favoring of female AI points to is what you call benevolent sexism, right? And that there are these upsides to this. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yes. Well, first, I want to get back to the point where you mentioned that we tend to perceive, you know, women more like in the show that you mentioned, that the female character is perceived as more human. It's true, because I forgot to mention that warmth and the quality of warmth and feeling emotions are seen as fundamental qualities to be a full human. They are lacking in machines more than in animals. And so that's why characters that are transformed into female entities, by just doing that, we add this warmth and this experience, like this, the fact of experiencing emotion that is lacking from machines. Machines are perceived as very rational, because what makes us human is our rationality and our good emotions, our morality. Machines are very good at being rational and competent.
Well, at least appearing rational and competent. Obviously, they're only as rational as we make them, algorithmic-wise, right?
Of course. But I'm thinking about this rationality, but like, for example, calculating very fast, right, or playing chess, you know, like these very rational decisions, like strategy and, yeah, you know, and
right,
playing Go and chess and calculating very fast and these algorithms, you know, making decisions that in a few seconds that we would not be able to do, right? So we don't need to add this attribute to machines, because they are already rational. But what they're lacking is emotions and experience. And because stereotypically, we tend to perceive women as more likely to experience emotions and warmth and being warm, just by adding this female gender, we make it more human, because what was missing was more warmth and emotion, sorry.
Would you also, though, agree that maybe one of the things that we see, again, in a lot of movies and literature, and also even, and this could be just from a marketing point of view, to make machines look more like human-like, it's not just emotion, but also irrationality. Acting out of emotion in a way that you would not expect them to.
Yes.
And that seems to me also to be the point and help us to signal like, hey, I'm being irrational, and therefore I'm being human. We're predictably irrational, as Dan Ariely says. And so there can be certain predictably irrational actions that one can build into the machine. Now, one of the discussions you mentioned dealt with AlphaGo, right? And one of the things that got them, I think the team behind AlphaGo, that got them stumped and thinking about this, like, wait, have we reached a threshold kind of moment, was a decision that seemed, a decision made by AlphaGo, not the team, but by AI, that seemed irrational on face value. Initially, some of the choices it was making were not actually ones that a human would make. But then it ended up with this kind of awesome, correct solution, counterintuitive to the problem, that ended up winning the game.
Well, on the long term was rational because it made them win. And so that's the goal, was to win. Right? So it was rational in a way, even though it was not perceived as being rational for humans, because there were new moves that they didn't know, right? But it was at the end rational if the algorithm is programmed with one single decision, is to win at all costs, whatever the moves are.
And actually, that raises a lot of problems. Let's get back, if we can, to what, again, we were referring to earlier as this benevolent sexism. Again, how would you define that?
Okay, so benevolent sexism is actually when you endow positive human qualities to women in general. For example, you're going to say, oh, she's very pretty, she's nice, she's so warm, she's very helpful, you know. And that sounds nice when you say so, but in reality, it's benevolent sexism because you... you give a very traditional role to women that might actually be an obstacle for women to pursue, for example, different career paths or to have a different role in life. So a woman, for example, if a woman is not, like very competent, and make decisions very fast and doesn't smile, she will be perceived as bossy and maybe even bitch, you know? But the same for a man would be fine. So this is benevolent sexism because it sounds nice, but it's not, because it's going to, these are stereotypes that prevent women to fulfill different paths in life.
Aside from the seemingly positive aspects of benevolent sexism, I want to turn our attention to the darker side of it. There have been several reports about a number of apps that are being created, some have been created, including one in particular called Replica, which lets users create chatbots, which enables them to carry on almost coherent conversations similar to what we have experienced lately with ChatGPT. And so you're having this with the chatbot, which is designed specifically in a way to be your friend. But now really has become a little bit more than that. Some of these people are using Replica, the app, to actually have on-demand romantic or at least from a platonic point of view, sexual partners. So this is a brave new world in a way that we're faced with here. So, okay, this isn't the first time, right, that in a way technology has been used, unfortunately, to kind of accommodate a particular aspect of human nature. But the troubling aspect, at least to me, of this particular application is that now men, in a way, are using these apps and they're creating AI romantic partners, but then they are verbally abusing them. So in some cases, they're talking to them and they're threatening them that they may be turning them off. And then, of course, the AI is trained to beg not to be turned off. And I found it very disturbing that we're at this point. And actually, here we have again men, obviously for the most part, I suppose, that are creating these AI bots for the sole purpose of abusing them. And my question to you is, what are the real life dangers of this kind of behavior? Do you see any risks here?
Yes. Well, this is like a very, very interesting topic. And as I said, I'm starting to work on this and how we treat human entities and non-human entities.
Well, we'll have you back next time. You have another paper on this. So please keep us informed.
Yes. Well, I'm trying to publish this paper, but it's very hard. You know, it takes years. but yeah. So, well, this is related to robot rights, even though this is not about like real, like physical robots, but here these are virtual robots. And so there are two different sides. So right now there's no empirical data yet on the effect of hurting robots, right? And talking badly to robots or hurting a robot physically or verbally. But there has been lots of researchers in philosophy and law discussing this topic. But right now we have no empirical data. But there are two sides, okay? So some people think that we should defend robots and even empathize more with robots and grant them rights. And others believe that we should not, okay? So some people who say that we should not hurt robots, well, first, because they think that for three main reasons. So the first one is that robots can be programmed in the near future to have a consciousness and to feel pain. Right now, they do not. And that's the lambda debate, right? So right now, they do not. So this is not an issue. Yeah, it's not relevant yet. The second one is that AI, and I think that's one of the most important, is that AI learns from us. So this algorithm, they learn from the interaction. So if we show hate, if we are aggressive toward bots, well, bots will behave more aggressively toward us. And that's not the type of future or virtual world we want to build, right? And the third point is that hurting robots and talking badly to robots could make us maybe crueler to living entities. So here, there's no empirical evidence. It's like in video games, right? We don't know whether violent people are drawn to video games or if video games make us more violent. Well, the past, there has been lots of research on that. And I think we are confident to say that now that video games do not make us more violent. It's more like violent people who are drawn to video games. But here in AI, it's different because really, we are hardwired to treat these entities as living entities. For us, they are human. People who talk to their replica for months or for years, they really believe that they are their friend or their even their girlfriend, right? If it's a female AI. So if we sex talk, and because we're talking a lot, I mean, the main issue is sex talk, right? And verbally abuse these female voice assistants, such as Alexa, Siri, or replica. But it's also about direct racism. I mean, maybe people can be racist also towards, it's not just sexism, it can be racism too. And if there's no pushback because it's just a bot, well, that could maybe make us more inclined to mistreat actual women and people of color in real life. We don't know that yet. We don't know that yet. We don't know whether it reflects our morality or whether it's going to change our morality. And this is a topic that I'm really interested in. Another point is that those who are against robot rights think that we should not empathize at all with robots. We should just be indifferent towards these robots because maybe loving and protecting robots could actually decrease our love for humans, making us disliking living entities because for different reasons. First, because robots are going to answer all our needs. So we will be less dependent on humans, less dependable, and we might grow farther apart. Because social robots remove the need to empathize with other human beings. So we might become emotionally shallow at one point toward humans. And another one is that these robots, I mean, think about Replica, my Replica girlfriend, imagine. And she's perfect. She's always happy, you know, she's always nice. She's going to answer all my questions, you know. I love you. You're perfect. You're beautiful. Well, I might start.
Where do I sign up?
I might stop perceiving the flaws of humans. You know, they're maybe they're rude, you know, they're too complex, they're too human. And we might feel more disgust at one point towards humans and less empathy for people. And that's what I'm working right now. I'm working on this maybe zero-sum game of people and robot, right? Of robot and people love. If we love robots, at one point we might maybe love people less.
Well, Sylvie, this has been amazing. It's been wonderful and eye-opening for me as well. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Well, thank you.
And I also encourage you to please get that research on its way so we can have you back in our program. The last question in particular you're dealing with and you're engaged with is one that has been in my mind for some time. So I am looking for answers and it'll be wonderful getting some of those questions answered. Again, Sylvie, thank you so much for everything. Thank you for your time and, of course, for our listeners. Thank you for joining us today. As always, if you like the show, we invite you to subscribe and leave us a comment. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to join us for the next episode of On Air for a discussion at the intersection of AI and IR theory, law, and practice. Until then, stay human.